right, so we're here with Kevin Yoxel, aka Yox. If you're listening to this, there's a great chance you probably know who he is, but I'll, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm gonna run it down.
Okay.
He went to Texas A&M Commerce back then. It was East Texas.
No, I went to East Texas State.
Yeah, which is now it's on its fourth name. I can't even keep up.
It's East Texas State. There,
it was East Texas State. TC, this might not be in order. TCU, Minnesota, UCLA, Rice, obviously Auburn, where you spent
Auburn before Rice, yeah.
Part of the national championship, Waco, Midway, Houston Straight Jesuits,
East Central and San Antonio.
I forgot you're a Hornet. Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. I was there in 2000, I think. It was a great Midway.
I left East Central, went to Midway here in Waco, where we live now. And then the XFL went to the Renegades the season they came when the XFL came back right before COVID, and man, it was rocking. It was going good. I was enjoying it. Lived at my mom's house because I'm from Dallas, and it was rocking. And then COVID hit, and I'm sure all these young people have a story about COVID. You guys were probably all in high school, junior high, middle school when it hit, and how devastating it was. Well, it shut down the league. And we had the Vince McMahon, who owned it at the time, he had a really interesting plan. And part of that plan was every team got the same equipment for not only on the field, but training room equipment, weight room equipment. And when we had our big meeting among strength coaches, they told us we were getting this equipment from Dynamic Fitness and Strength. Well, I'd never heard of Dynamic before. And I was like, you know, I was trying to big time going, well, just give us a budget. I'll take, you know, I'll get what I want. And he's like, no, you're getting Dynamic. And they delivered the equipment over to Choctaw Park where the Rangers used to play in Arlington. And they showed up with this equipment. I've been around the horn a few times. I mean, I've had every manufacturer in my weight rooms, and I've gone to all the manufacturing plants. And they started zipping this stuff together, and I thought, man, these racks look good. This cable machine looks good. This look, you know, all the stuff was great. So during that shortened season before COVID, I was in contact with the Dynamic people about different attachments I wanted to get. So I kind of got to know them a little bit. Well, then COVID hit, shut down the league, and I got contacted by a former assistant of mine that was now working for Dynamic, and he said, hey, we need a Texas rep. We don't have anybody directly working in Texas. And I kind of fought it a little bit. I wanted to keep coaching, but at the time I was 60 years old, and nobody was pounding on my door to be their strength coach. And we loved living in Waco. So I made a deal with him, and I went up to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where we manufacture. And I've been to all of them. I've been to Powerlift. I've been to Sornex. I had two rooms with Sornex at Auburn. I've been to Pro Maxima. I've been to Samson. I've been to all those plants. Well, I got up there to Eau Claire and saw how we manufactured stuff. And now, you know, because you've done two weight rooms with me, we make great stuff. And oh, yeah. So it's been 5 years now that I've been with them. So
you're on the road a lot too.
I did a really long one this past week. My wife was not very happy with me, but I went to Kirk Hester's memorial in Louisiana. You know, he passed. And so I drove from at 8 o'clock Monday night. I left Waco. I got to Little Hammond, Louisiana at 4 a.m. on Tuesday morning. I went to the memorial, and then I drove up to Longview to see some coaches in Longview the next day, like 6 hours. So, yeah, I'll cover some ground now.
I'm curious, is it your own car, or you get a company car? Because the mileage.
Well, we can rent. We can either rent cars, or we can get reimbursed for mileage. And I don't know, the times that I've come to see you, I don't know if you've seen the back end of everything I've got in this Volkswagen Atlas, but I've got bumper plates, and I've got dumbbells and t-shirts and all sorts of stuff. And if I rent a car, I've got to take all that out and put it in a car. So I just get reimbursed for gas. I just rather have my own vehicle.
A lot of miles. I can only imagine Kurt Hester's memorial was probably well attended.
It was, yeah, very well attended. I got there early and was able to talk to his wife and his kids, and he's got grandkids. He's got like three grandkids. And so I me and Rusty Witt from Tulane were able to visit with him. Bert Soren from Sornex was there too, because Rusty just did his room at Houston with Sornex. And so the three of us got there. We were there before anybody else. So we got to visit with them. And then right at when it started, 11 o'clock, man, people started coming. And it was going to be 11 to 3. I left for Longview about 1 o'clock. And if you know Kirk well, socially, that thing had the makings to be going late into the evening. And I needed to get out of there. So that's what his wife and kid said. He wanted people telling stories about him and cussing and having a few adult beverages and stuff. So that was definitely going on. So
Whit was there, I'm sure he indulged and was a part of it. I'm trying to get him to the May 30th clinic. I worked for him in Sam Houston.
Oh man, he does a great job. Yeah, we talked a little training and we had a couple of shots there, you know, in Kirk's honor. You gotta do what you gotta do.
Absolutely. And I did intentionally not mention your Bishop Lynch product, since I worked at Trinity Christian Addison and John Paul II, and we hated the fat fryer, so I was gonna leave that part out of it. Well, let's get rolling with some intern professional. Sure.
Fire away.
Rock's ready to go.
Okay.
So from your time being a strength coach to now sales, what's kind of been like your favorite moment throughout? Is it more so the sales aspect that you love, or is it the strength conditioning side where being on the floor with the athletes?
I miss being on the floor with the athletes. I mean, I do. I like what I'm doing. Don't get me wrong. I've gotten to the point now where I'm 66 years old. So, I mean, it takes a different kind of energy, you know, than you guys have to put forth being on the floor and all that. But it takes just a different kind of level of energy, like this computer. I spend a lot of time in front of a computer coaching, but it's not even close to what I do now, you know. But I miss the competition stuff was great, you know, especially the places I coached. The competition, not just football, but all I made, because I, you know, James knows this. When I started now, dude, I was at TCU, Southwest Conference, Division I school. We had 1,500 square feet for the weight room. So it's smaller than the weight room you guys have now, much smaller. I had four squat racks, and this is back when everything was, it wasn't put together in terms of benching in the rack and stuff. So I had four standalone platforms, four power racks, four standalone benches, four standalone inclines. We had dumbbells up to about 150 pounds. We had a bunch of old Nautilus machines in 1,500 square feet for 16 sports. Okay. And back then we didn't have a computer. So my point is, I got invested early on with being involved in all the teams' competitions. I went to every one that I could, and that carried over. Even at Auburn, even though I was the overall strength coach over all the sports, and we had four weight rooms, and mine just for football was ended up being 24,000 square feet. Okay. I went to as many competitions as I could. So I miss the competition stuff a lot, because you know you're invested in it. But I really miss the day-to-day on the floor, you know, coaching kids up, out conditioning. I really miss that part of it. That's the coaching part I really, really miss a lot. But
hey, Chris, when you were at Auburn, did you do – anything besides football? I mean,
it was day-to-day day-to-day programming was just football. I don't know if you know Brian Karkoska, but Brian was my Olympic sport guy, and he took any headaches away from me as far as the other sports. He really managed the other three weight rooms. He managed his and the other weight rooms. And Brian and I met once or twice a week. And I just kept, you know, football had a separate budget, but I kept up with the budget and all that kind of stuff. And
TCU, did you do all the sports?
I did every one of them. TCU, it was, first it was Robbie Robinson was the head guy, and I was his GA, and that was it. And then when Robbie left, they elevated me, and I had one GA. That was it. There were two of us.
And you always look through the lens of what you have. I look through a D3 kind of lens. Do you think that helped you early on? Do you think that's kind of a missing component of today's world? As you
yes,
a sport and well, you got a program for everybody. You're going to learn and make more mistakes.
Well, it's a little bit twofold. So one thing, and I didn't know it at the time, but being at TCU, and when I went to Minnesota, I only did football, but still was very involved with. Back then too, Minnesota had split departments. They had a men's athletic department and a women's, and they stayed that way. And they and Iowa stayed that way for a long, long time. So I was on the men's side, didn't coach any other sports, but then, and that was 3 years. Then I get to UCLA. UCLA's got one weight room and all 21 sports in one weight room. So even when I went to UCLA, so I had 16 sports at TCU, football only at Minnesota, but I go to UCLA, and that was the first time I had a big staff. Mike Lynn was there. Craig Sowers was there. Sarah Andrews, Stephanie Tracy, who's now in athletic administration at Kentucky. She was an intern for us. Rhett Warren, who's at Navy, was with us. We had a great staff. Anyway, we had all 21 in one room, and I had seven sports when I was at UCLA. Football and six other sports. Then I get to Auburn, and I'm still the overall strength coach, but I just had football day to day. And the same thing at Rice. I was the overall strength coach, but I just had football day to day. But I think that, yeah, my experiences early on really helped me in developing a philosophy about training. And then also when I took these high school jobs that I've had, it was back to the old days where you're a one-man band, man. You know, now luckily at a place like here at Midway, I had 44 squat racks in the room with a full indoor, you know, and coaches helping too. But I think my experiences early on with all those sports really helped me out, especially UCLA. I mean, I never expected I'd be coaching women's water polo and strength conditioning. You know,
did you have to research or what you do? I mean,
my philosophy has always been pretty, pretty straightforward. You know, all this talk about sports specific training in the weight room, I'm not way into that a whole lot. I'm really not. Everybody's got a hinge. They got a squat, you know, some type of squat movement, some type of hinge movement, some type of press movement, preferably the majority of all that on your feet. You know, I think the specifics come in the conditioning part in our profession. I think the specifics should come more in the conditioning part than it does in the weight room. And even at a place like Auburn, where I just had football, there was very little change in what quarterbacks did as opposed to offensive linemen. Really, the big change came in season. I really changed intensities in season with football players and what they did. But off season, summertime, you know, you mentioned baseball earlier. I think dumbbells and all that kind of stuff is great for baseball players. But you know what? Sometimes you got barbells and you got to use barbells. You know, so
dumbbells. You really have to use barbells and landmines.
Right. And, you know, I tell this great story, and you three young people have to excuse me. James knows this. I tell a lot of stories. But it all relates. Okay. Here I am at TCU, a little bitty weight room. And we had this transfer from the University of Texas, and his last name was Ryan, and he was a pitcher, and it was a big, big deal back then. It's not like now with the transfer portal, you know, you just come and go. Back then, if you transferred, especially if you transferred in conference, you had to sit out a year. You had to get permission. I mean, it was a big, big deal. Well, here was this young man from Texas, last name of Ryan. Keep that in mind. Pitcher, keep that in mind. He decides to leave Texas and transfer to TCU. Well, his dad is Nolan Ryan. Okay. And Nolan was kind of finishing up his career with the Rangers at that point. So this was probably 1990-ish. I was there from 87 to 92. So it was after I became the head guy, and his name was Reed. And one day Reed came in after working out and he said, "Hey coach, my dad wants to give you a call. He wants to ask a favor." I said, "Well, great, you know." And this is before cell phones and texting, you know, you just didn't text somebody. You called them on the landline, right? Coach, you still have a landline in your office?
No. But you better know how far off the ground.
Anyway, my phone rings one day and other end, "Coach, hey, my name's Nolan Ryan. I'm Reed's dad. I pitch for the Rangers," and I'm sitting there going, yeah, I know exactly who you are. But I don't know if y'all have seen the Nolan Ryan documentary. I think it's on Netflix. But if you haven't seen it, see it. Because he's one of the back then, lifting back then was, some guys did it, but it was more or less very, very taboo. It was something that people didn't do, especially pitchers. Okay. Well, Nolan Ryan, he didn't give a damn about that kind of stuff. He lifted. And so the reason he was calling me is because our baseball stadium was so small. When he would show up for games, if he worked out in Arlington, he'd be late to see when Reed was going to pitch. If he showed up on time for the games, it was so, the stadium at the time was so intimate, he'd start walking in and people would, you know, they wanted autographs and they wanted to talk to him and all this stuff. Well, my weight room back door opened up right into this chain link fence that went into the stadium. And he could walk right up into the press box and watch the game from the press box. So he called me up. He said, "Coach, on the days that he pitches, would it be okay if I came over and got my weight workout done in your room?" And he said, "And Reed told me all about that door that goes out right into the stadium. I could go in there and I'd be in the press box and nobody would know." And I said, "Done, man, let's go." And so for about, I think it was about two seasons, he came over about 5-7 times, very, very gracious. "Hey, am I in the way?" And, you know, any one more person in that weight room would be in the way, right? But this is Nolan Ryan. I don't care if I have a whole room full of kids, he's going to get to work out. But my whole point to this story was I got to watch Nolan Ryan. Okay. Still in his prime. He back squatted with a barbell. He bench pressed with a barbell. He overhead pressed with a barbell. He did in this documentary, they show him doing one arm hammer. I think it's hammer curls with 40 pound dumbbells, working his biceps. And that's always been, "Oh, can't do that," you know? So that to me showed me right away that, you know what, it's going to be okay. You just got to be smart about the way you do it and the way you program it, of course. And the same thing at UCLA. At any given time at UCLA in my weight room, whether I was training them or somebody else, one of my staff was, UCLA is one of those, you know, I still call it the Pac-10, but the Olympic sports was second to none as far as talent was concerned, right? And so at any given time, I'd look up and we had in the summer of 96 at UCLA in the Atlanta Olympics, there were 40 former or current UCLA athletes in the Olympics. Okay. And most of them, if they weren't at UCLA anymore, they still trained at UCLA. So I got to look up from my desk, and if I wasn't training them, somebody else was, and I got to watch those athletes train. And you would think, "Oh, I bet they were doing some really, really cool stuff." Well, guess what? They were cleaning, they were snatching, they were hang cleaning, they were hang snatching, they were back squatting, they were front squatting. Gail Devers, I know Coach knows the name. Gail Devers was a world-class sprint hurdler, and she was known for not only being fast, but she had these fingernails that were long fingernails. She used to come in there with those fingernails on and front squatting, those damn fingernails would be sticking up over the bar. But anyway, my point there is I got to watch all these so-called they were world-class. And all they did was basic training in the weight room. The skill stuff happened on the track, in the ring, on the pitch. You know, so to me, in what you guys do, I think too much, and I'm going to try to get off this soapbox. I think we get convoluted with being pretty good at a lot of stuff instead of being really, really good at a few, you know, not a few things, but a good, you know, a good collection of really good base lifting stuff. I think kids coming in extra to get extra work. That's when you want to do that cool stuff and all that. But when you're working with some of the numbers you guys have in there, man, that's tough to program some of that, you know, some of that cool stuff. So I've always, my programming, people look at my stuff and they're like, okay, well, I thought I was going to learn something here, but I've always kept it. I've been a stickler for technique. I got away from one rep max testing. I don't know, coach, I don't know what you're doing now with your guys, but I think we talked about this when I talked to your kids at Cistercian.
But yeah, I'm a one RM guy.
I got away from it because when the NCAA changed the rules about discretionary training, I felt like it hamstrung us to get the kids ready for testing. So I started doing, you know, 2 and 3 rep maxes in the power stuff and 3 to 5 rep maxes in the strength stuff, you know, still doing the vertical leaps and all that. But, I got away from one rep max testing.
We do more heavy training max singles than back slapping, ammonia sniffing, kind of, you know, just a heavy, heavy single. But I've always thought, and again, we're just in a strength debates podcast, but it's good, robust dialogue. It's like, if the risk of injury is there, then why increase the odds with multiple reps? The technique has a higher probability of breaking down each rep with one rep.
We always set it up. I said, hey, look, as soon as it starts breaking down, you're done and it's my call. So, yeah. You know, that's.
Oh, I could have got another one. Yeah.
I say, well, that's on me. Sorry. You know, and then what I would do high school and at Auburn and at Rice, what I would do would be whatever they tested at, that didn't now go on the computer as their percentage that I was going to work off of. That was a testing max. I always kept up with what I called their training maxes. And the training maxes came straight from what the kid was doing in the weight room training wise, because we recorded everything. So they had a training max that we lifted by, and then they had that rep max, and that's what I turned into a one rep max through a formula, gave to the coaches, gave to the scouts, because they couldn't wrap their head around a kid doing 380 for three. They want to know, well, what does that mean for one?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? 380 for three in the bench is pretty damn good, coach. I wouldn't really worry about what it is for one, you know, but anyway, but your original question, I apologize. I miss the day to day. I miss the day to day more than anything, but the competition days, those are pretty good too, but I really miss the day to day. Most of all.
I just got one more. So yeah. Your time, you know, you've mentioned how you're the old school way, like a lift is a lift pretty much. You know, the sports science realm is starting to grow.
Yeah.
How do you factor that in, especially somewhere like at Rice and Auburn? Is that something that you implemented a lot of, or?
You got to think about the years. So at Auburn, GPS training, that was starting to really become in vogue. And so we started getting inquiries from Catapult. And so I remember the spring before our last season, when we got let go, we had all kinds of people coming in from Australia and where these companies originated. And we started talking about doing it. And the great thing about being in a place like Auburn, we didn't have to think about what the cost was going to be. So we were in the midst of getting all that stuff far after the season of 12. And then we got fired at the end of the season of 12. So I know Ryan Russell, who replaced me, still a good friend and all that. Ryan had worked for me at Auburn at one point. Ryan got way into that. So anyway, I left before I was able to do it at Auburn. Then I transitioned to Rice. Well, now I'm at Rice and we don't have two nickels rubbed together at Rice. Okay. I mean, we didn't have any money at Rice. So at Rice, we couldn't afford it. So I really have not been that exposed to it. I mean, I know a little bit about it to be dangerous. Okay. But I really wasn't that exposed. Now, do I think it's worth it? No doubt. But I think if you use it so much, and this is, I've seen this, I think if you use it so much and you just kind of live and die on that hill in terms of it being an absolute decision maker, how you're going to do your training, I don't think that's very smart either. I'm a firm believer in coaches still have to have somewhat of an eye for training. And I know this GPS training, counting yardage and contacts off the ground and all this kind of stuff and fatigue, I get it. I think it's great. It's safer and all that. But, and I think Coach Burke would agree with me, there is a lot to be said for whether you're training softball. I'm trying to think of most of the sports that we would actually condition, right? So softball, baseball, not track. You forget about track because they're doing their own conditioning. But tennis, you know, there's a lot to be said for that day that you're out there and you think, I know they're tired, but I'm seeing that we got to go a little bit more. And I think sometimes people get so into the measurement type devices that they're like, no, we're at such and such. They're showing this. We got to stop. I think there, and I can think back to training days at every university where I've been, every high school I've been, where in my mind, Coach Yox is going, okay, now don't be a dumbass here. You need to let them stop. They've had enough. We got to go one more. And sometimes that one more is something that kind of kicks something into them mentally down the road. I know it, and it's very subjective, right? You can't put a finger on it. So the thing I worry about with all the measurement stuff that you guys have in your possession right now is, don't lose the other side of being a coach and having a pair of eyes and having a brain and making some subjective decisions that might carry your kids over the hump when they really need it during competition. So yeah. I think this stuff's valuable. I do, but I've seen too many that just, you know, and there's so much information you got to decide, okay, what am I going to really use and what is just BS and I'm not going to, you know, I think there's so much information that comes out. I think if you're going to use it, but don't let it rule your world, you know.
Because there was a sports science department at Auburn during those years. You never had a sports science department.
No, it was just all that stuff was just beginning. That's why I, you know, when people – say, well, what do you want your title to be at, you know, at these high schools and stuff? I was like, I'm a strength conditioning coach. That's what I'm doing. Because I think again, for you younger folks, I think you when you start calling yourself a performance coach, guess how that's linking you to that team's performance. And I've been fired twice in my 50s, so I know what that's about. You got to be really careful. I still look at what you do, what James does. Y'all are strength and conditioning coaches, and there's not a damn thing wrong with that. But when you start saying I'm a performance guy and I'm this and I'm that, okay, well, you better hope that there's a lot more numbers in that first column than there is in that next column.
That's a good point. I never thought of the performance title. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Blake, what do you got?
So, Coach, if you can go back in time and talk to your past self, what would one thing that you would say to yourself?
Can you say that a little bit louder? I couldn't hear.
If you can go back in time and talk to your past self, what's one piece of advice you'd give?
You know, just kind of related to my last answer, I would have tried to educate myself more about some of those things that were coming up, even being in a place like Rice where I couldn't afford it, I needed to educate myself a little bit more on all of that stuff. So I had a far better understanding. And then there were, you know, there was other things too. I mean, you can't see my library here in this room where I'm at, but I've always been a big reader, and I've always, you know, when I've read different books on training, I've always tried to take some things out of it. And I wish there was some more things that I paid attention to. I think Poliquin has got some great ideas, and I always looked at his stuff as being, man, I don't know how I can fit that in there. And, you know, all the different tables he had and things like that. I wish I would have had a little bit. I spoke earlier about having basic training. I wish I would have put a little bit more variety and thought into some of the training stuff we did. Cause I, you know, quite honestly, I kind of got hamstrung and dinged on that being, oh, he doesn't do a lot of variety of stuff. So I, you know, I probably should have branched out a little bit more, but again, you know, when I started, and you can talk to, you know, you talk to guys that are kind of my same generation that are still doing it. They've had a chance to be exposed to those things and educate themselves. And I would say the thing that morphed with me in my training of athletes wasn't so much the weight room, but it was the conditioning aspect of it. Early on, you know, James will tell you probably when he was playing there, conditioning was, you know, big guy like James, he might have a mile and a half to run that day, you know? And I mean, I was a part of doing that at TCU in Minnesota, running the just linear yardage and yardage and yardage. Then I finally came around to the thinking of, okay, well, we need to break up this conditioning, you know, for linemen and for running backs and for DBs and, you know, have more variety of that. And so I did morph into that a lot more once I got to UCLA and then on. So
we were supposed to run a 7 minute mile when we reported.
Yep.
It was hard to do at 285. But
well, and you know, these guys have never met me before, but coach will tell you I'm not the tallest person in the world. And at East Texas State, I played whatever they needed me to play that week on scout team, basically. But I weighed about 240 pounds, and I got measured for an insurance policy the other day, and I was 5'9". I'm 5'7" now. I don't know how that happened, but I weighed at one point. I weighed when I was competing in powerlifting and weightlifting. I weighed about 200. Well, at one point I weighed 250 pounds, and my last year at East Texas State, we had to do the run, we call it a 12-minute run. And it was a certain amount of laps, and Coach Hawkins thought it'd be bright to have us wear helmets and our shoulder pads.
Oh, God. No longer either.
My little short legs. Oh, Lord. It had to have been ugly. I'm glad people didn't have cell phones back then.
God, it's a great, great idea. Yeah, I love that.
Football, yeah. Hey, football specific, right?
God, Blake, what else you got?
So back when you were on the floor, what was your why?
What was my why?
Yes,
sir. You know, Rusty Witt and I, because at this memorial the other day, we got, I think probably several of the drinks led to this, but we got into a bit of a philosophical discussion, and we talked about it a little bit. We talked about more on my ride home yesterday. He called yesterday. You know, I never really, honestly, I never thought about culture and building this and building that. I relied a lot on what I related to as an athlete and how I was actually brought up. And I just was a big stickler for everybody doing right. And that meant a lot to me. And being fair to, it didn't matter to me because I was a walk-on. It didn't matter to me if somebody was a walk-on, and it didn't matter what sport either. Male or female sport, boy, girl, walk on, scholarship, didn't matter. I wanted to treat everybody the same. But I got to the point where all of a sudden you realize these people are going to become adults at some point. And I wanted them to at least carry a few things away. One, just being responsible. you know, just carrying your end of the load and figuratively and, you know, I wanted them to carry their hold up their share of the load and then do everything right, be responsible, be on time. We had, and I didn't make this up, but the kids called it Yox time, and everything was 5 minutes fast. And if it had anything to do related with what I was doing, the coaches, everywhere I've coached, the coaches were respectful of that. So if Bob Toledo at UCLA called a team meeting at 3 o'clock and he called it, then it was at 3 o'clock. If they were meeting in the weight room with Coach Yox, everybody better be there at 2:55. Okay. And I was a real stickler for, if you're supposed to do something right, then do it right. So I guess you could say that was kind of my why. And then just all the relationships that I still have. I mean, think about this, do the math. I still call them kids. Okay. But the kids I had at UCLA, all of them, men and women, are 55 years old or above right now. And I'm still in contact with them. I mean, I'm still in contact with everybody, you know, with the majority of the people I coached. And to hear what they do now, and they come back and they say, and I get emotional about it, but they, you know, Coach, do you remember when you told me this? And a lot of times I'll go, told you what? And then they'll tell me about how I was ripping their tail end for doing something, but how it made a difference later on in their life. And I'll be honest with you, at the time I was just mad at them and I wasn't thinking about that, you know, but you guys have, you will, if you stick in this or some type of coaching, whether the sport coaching that you participated in, you will have and I'm sure James is the same way right now. I'm sure you hear from people all over the place. It's amazing the effect that you have on them. And so I've come to believe that that's been my why, whether it's been consciously or unconsciously, you know, because you got to, I have a nephew who's playing baseball at Bates up in Maine, and strength and conditioning is, he's a lifter and he loves lifting and he's kind of thought about strength and conditioning. We had to have that talk about, hey man, you got to really want to do this now. You got to really, really love this job, because if you don't love it, then at some point you're not going to keep doing it, you know, and you really do. I mean, you really got to, you know, there's days I'm watching kids work out going, what's going to happen to her? You know, somebody screwing up in a workout or something. And then the next thing you know, they call you 20 years later and they're a neurosurgeon or something like that, you know, and they say, man, when we had to run those 800s and we had to do this. And so I think the why should be for you younger ones right now, the why should be thinking about what effect you're going to have, not only this season or whatever you're working towards, this off season goals and all that stuff, but the why needs to be where somebody's going to be in 10, 15, 20. In my case, I mean, you know, I had people leaving TCU in 1989 that I'm still in contact with, you know, that, and there's been hiccups too. There's been a lot of people taking their own lives and are dying from a disease and stuff like that. So there's a lot of sad parts too, but, you know, I think the thing you need to think about is the why needs to be not only what you're doing today, what they're, you know, how many reps they got and how many sets they've got, but what that why is going to mean to them later on, because you got to go head first into this job. You got to fully invest yourself in this job. And I did that just because of the way I was athletically, where I went to high school, how my parents brought me up. That's why I did it, but it morphed into a lot more than that, you know, invest in somebody's life. So
it's a great why.
Yeah,
I just have one question because all my other ones were answered mid conversation. Right
about that, I'm a talker now. James will tell you.
Did you do anything specific to attack the mental side of training, so like confidence or motivation, rather than just like physically training itself?
You know, again, you got to do the math on when I started. I think it's a very important. I think part of I think part of the strength coach, because they spend so much time with y'all now, you know, or they always have. But I think now, and again, I mentioned COVID. You guys know, y'all have a better perspective of this than I do. I think COVID affected your age group, around your age group, probably more so than me and than James and I. You know, just because some of y'all might not have had a high school graduation or a prom or gone to school, you know, and I can't fathom that. I can't even, and luckily my kids also missed it too. But I think the mental side of it is so much more important. Now, did I necessarily look at, okay, we need to do this today because mentally it's going to do that. I didn't pay much attention to that. But as I look back, I felt like if athletes could do things disciplined in training and we made training intense enough, then when they went out to actually perform, they would have somewhat more of a better intent. Obviously, physically, they're going to perform better. So that was, of course, a goal. But I think mentally, they were going to have better intent and intensity, and then be successful. But as far as having something that I had on a sheet of paper that day and went, okay, this is, we're going to affect this part of their brain today, I didn't have a plan, to be honest with you. I think nowadays, though, a lot of places have somebody, and I don't know if it's, James, you can tell me, I don't know if it's gotten into some of the bigger schools as far as on the strength staff, them having a mental coach, I guess, or something like that. I bet some places have.
Yeah, most of them will have a sports psychologist,
right?
Like a nutritionist.
Well, and this nephew that I just spoke of, he's majoring in sports psychology. And I said, Joe, this might be a really good tie-in with strength conditioning. This may be a really, you know, because back in the dark ages when we did nutrition, I was a nutritionist. Okay. And now, you know, you have that on your strength staff. So I think it's an important piece, to get back to your question. I think, you know, when I watch what goes on with athletes nowadays, you know, like the young man over in Dallas, defensive end that took his life the other night, you know, I mean, and I've had friends my age take their own life too, but it seems like now, with young people, not just athletes, but with young people, that is so much more prevalent, you know, and I think they're spending a lot of time with you guys. So yeah, you got to kind of look at, you know, you got to look at their fields a little bit and see how they're doing, but you got to have that balance of, okay, things aren't going real good today, but you know what? We do have to push, because they're going to run into adversary, and they got to know how to push through it too. So,
yeah, it's kind of a tightrope. It's tough to balance the two, mental health and performance, and kind of having your antenna where you can sense that, but if you don't have a relationship with them, then you won't.
Yeah, you got, that's true. You got to have that relationship. And did I probably do some things that today, these days, people be like, I can't believe you said that or you did that. And yeah, I bet I did plenty of that, you know, and I think that's something I hear coaches, Mickey Marotti and some of the other guys that I've known forever, talk about how some places where they're at, kids actually have, they can come, they can call in, they can text in and go, coach, need to have a mental health day, you know, and they're not, and they, therefore they don't train that day. And, you know, I know in 1990, what my answer to that would have been, you know, but I think today, nowadays, there's just so many things that go on. What if you don't give them that mental health day, you know? So yeah, you just hope people don't take advantage of it. So.
Oh, and before you know it, there'll be a collective bargaining in college, and there'll be a whole that'll be mandated and things like that. It's mm-hmm. probably a yeah. year or two away from that. Michael, I got a question, and we've had a conversation about it, but I wasn't good when I got here. Hopefully I'm a little bit better. What did you do to help your interns? Did you have Did you give them floor time? Did you have meetings?
Well, again, you have to look at my progression, right? So I came along when we did everything. And so it wasn't until I only had one GA in Minnesota to do football too. So it wasn't until I got to UCLA and it was really hard. All of a sudden I had myself and four other people that were full time to do these other sports. And, you know, I immediately went in kind of looking at them in more of a GA role. And I was thinking, okay, well, I've programmed for 16 sports at TCU. I can program for 21. And you know, I inherited all the people and I kept them and they did great. We had great time, great staff. But they had all had their own sports assigned to them already when I got there. And so I had to kind of shift gears and go, okay. But I admittedly, that first year or two, I ran roughshod over. I wanted to see every program. I wanted to, you know, talk to them before they got started. And then I got to the point where I felt like I could let it go a little bit, but I didn't want, you know, but I wanted that base philosophy to reflect my philosophy and not just from an ego standpoint, but I thought, okay, we have to have a common theme across the board when it comes, especially weight room training. We have to have pretty common theme, which we did. So with interns and GAs, man, I kind of looked at it as a little bit of a rite of passage. I needed to feel really good about them doing the mundane stuff that nobody looks forward to, the cleanup, the setup, all that stuff. And if they could handle that, then I slowly would farm out more responsibilities and things like that. And then the other thing was, from an education piece, I wanted them to, if they weren't certified at that point, and again, being in a place like Auburn, for example, we could pay for those things, right? I wanted them to get ready for they had their choice. They could do the NSCA test or the CSCCA test, which, you know, I mean, I was a charter member of the CSCCA and helped develop that test. And then I took my CSCS in 1987. So, you know, I mean, I'm a firm believer in just to add credibility, to add teeth to what you're doing, one of those two certifications to me is extremely important to have. And better yet, if you have the chance to have a mentor and do the practicum, go ahead and get your collegiate strength coaches, get your NSCA certification and get your CSCCA certification, if you can have both. It just gives us more credibility. And I've kept all of mine since that time too. I still do my, turn in my CEUs and all that stuff. You know, I think that part's very, very important. But I think, you know, if you have interns like what you've got right now, you've got to turn things over to them. But I always felt like I wanted them to, there had to be a little bit of proving ground first before I turned it over to them. But I think, and the other thing I think too is very important, especially now, people get so locked into the specialization of just having one sport. And I think everybody needs to be exposed to every, you know, working whatever sports you got on that campus. All three of these young people need to be exposed to working with that sport if that's the setup.
Did you have an intern, don't need a name, but one that stood out, or GA, was head and shoulders above everyone else? And if so, what were their qualities or what stood out so much about them?
Well, I mean, I had a number of them that were like that, you know, and there's a couple of names that stand out, but I hate to do that. But you know, I had one young man at Auburn that ended up becoming a full-time assistant for me. And he just came in and it didn't matter what he was asked to do. It was going to get done and it was going to get done right, you know. And then whatever plan I wanted to be followed, whether he liked it or not, whether he thought it was right or wrong, while he was implementing my plan, it was going to be done that way. And then when it was time for him to have his own teams and stuff like that, you know, I let him go and, you know, he did a great job. But I've been so blessed with assistants, interns, GAs. I hadn't missed the mark on too many of them. And then all the ADs that I worked for at every place, and the ADs at the high schools where I was, everybody's been great. I hear all these stories, you know, people have had these rough times with their ADs and stuff. I really never had that, man. I mean, I don't know why, but I think one thing that helped me was I didn't become a grad assistant. I taught special education until I was 27 years old. I didn't even know what GA stood for until I took the job at TCU and I found out my stipend was $150 a month. So I think my point there is I was a little bit older when I started doing this. And don't take this wrong, but I'd actually been in the real world. And I think teaching in the classroom, especially back in the early 80s, teaching special ed the way it was, I think that, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense. I've said this before, speaking engagements and people have gotten bent out of shape, but majoring in special ed and then actually being on the floor and teaching special ed for 4 or 5 years, I think that really helped me in my strength conditioning career. And by no means do I mean that in a derogatory sense, but it really did, just from a, if anything, from a patient standpoint.
Yeah. Patience, empathy, communication.
Yep.
A lot of coaches seem, they're almost reversed. It's, they were college and now they're in high school.
Right. Yep.
There's a bunch of them, Wally. What did you like? Not in a negative way, but what did you like about high school that was different than college? And you're like, hey, this is fun. I kind of missed this.
Well, yeah, and that happened. You know, my first job before I went to Rice, I was briefly at Strake Jesuit. And I went to a Catholic high school, and so ended up at Strake Jesuit in Houston. I kind of knew the drill of how academically strict it was going to be and things like that. So I kind of knew that drill. And it was a good segue from being at Auburn and going to Strake, because it was just boys. I didn't have boys and girl athletes, so the numbers were smaller. I mean, I remember being pretty overwhelmed because, man, I've been in a job for 14 years at Auburn where I had just football and I had myself and four other people just for football. And now I go to Strake and, man, I'm the one man band, you know? And so I quickly had to revert back to those TCU/UCLA days of programming. And I had a smaller group because it's just boys. So that helped me, because my next job was Rice. We got let go at Rice. And then that helped me when I went to East Central. So I had two weight rooms there and so many kids, and then on to Midway here. But the thing I really started to appreciate was watching the development of the kids. Because if you coach at a place like Auburn, UCLA, for the most part, when those kids come in, you're getting them at a pretty high level athletically, maybe not training wise, but athletically, pretty high level. Now I got to throttle down, and it's summertime. And not only do I have the high school kids, but I got the sixth graders, the seventh graders, and the eighth graders. And to be able to watch a kid go from being that, say they're an incoming ninth grader, and let's go with volleyball, a volleyball player, and she's intimidated by the weight room. She doesn't want to be in the weight room. And now all of a sudden she's got some Jake leg like me teaching her how to squat and clean and do all these things. And she, you know, the bar, you got to get the 15 pound bar. Everybody else used the 45 pound bar. She's embarrassed by that. But as the semester goes on, you know, she gets a little bit better and a little bit better. And then, you know, you get to Christmas time and training wise, they're into it. You get to the summer, and this always happened. Those girls that started at the beginning, I'm not just picking on girls, but those girls, small boys that couldn't lift a finger at the beginning. You know, you get to May and they're going, hey, when is summer conditioning starting, coach? When are we doing this? When are we doing that? you know, and they start to understand how valuable this is to them. And you, and not only have you seen that, but you, not to be creepy, but you see them physically changing too. All of a sudden, there's a little more definition through the shoulders, a little more definition in the legs, and because you know they've been consistent with their training. And so I think what I enjoyed about the development aspect between college and high school, while it's evident in college, okay, it's a lot more evident on the high school level, the development you see over just over a year's time. And the thing I noticed with most high school athletes, there was a huge jump between that, especially if they were a good athlete, there was a huge jump between that sophomore year, the end of their season, whatever the season was, and that sophomore year until they started the next season, their junior year. That seemed to me to be more the sweet spot physically. And it might, whether it has to do with testosterone, whatever, you know, just maybe making a big leap at that point. But I really enjoyed watching the development part of it. Not so much from a, not as much from a physical part as the mental part too. You know, once they start and they started coming in there and they were actually excited about being in the weight room, you know, or a day when you had inclement weather or something and they had to change your schedule. And you know, what usually happens, the coach comes in and goes, "Hey, we're not gonna be able to lift today, coach, because we got to do that." And you see those kids going, "Oh man, coach, can we come back later?" "Hell yeah, you can come back later." You know, and whereas 6 months ago, they wouldn't have said that, you know? I mean, I tell this story about my volleyball girls. They, you know, I love my favorite, if people ask, "What was your favorite sport?" And I have, they were all favorable, but my favorite female slash girl sport has to train has always been volleyball, because they just seem to have a better understanding of all these explosive movements you're doing. They can see that when they get on the court, you know, they can see that, they see that immediately, the hang cleans, the snatching, you know, all the shoulder work and all that stuff. And my kids at East Central at Midway. And I had volleyball at UCLA too. It was like I had a little weightlifting team, because when they first came in, you know, I told them, I said, "Now we're going to be doing some stuff from the hang position." I said, "You may want to start wearing some sweatpants and stuff like that, because your thighs are going to get pretty chafed up from that movement itself." And it didn't take but about a week, and the girls were, you know, they were complaining about their thighs. And I said, "Look, I told you, just go to Walmart, whatever, get some cotton sweats. You know, you leave them here in the weight room. You can wear those when we're doing it." Well, a lot of them didn't take the time or the responsibility to do it. So I went to the baseball coach, because he really liked cotton sweats. And I said, "Eddie, do you got some extra small, really small sweats?" He goes, "Yeah, I got a bunch that I give my freshman boys." So I had like 15 pair of small to extra small sweat pants in the weight room at Midway. And when the volleyball girls came in, man, they went right over there. You know, they'd look to see if I had cleaned them yet or whatever. I only did it about once a week. But anyway, they pull on those sweatpants, and the front of those pants were worn thin, because they were so into those movements and did them so well. And I didn't allow straps either. And the grip started going a little bit. So I taught them how to hook grip. And then once they learned how to hook grip, it was, "Coach, it's really making my thumb sore." I said, "Well, give me that roll of tape. Let me show you something." And people would walk into my weight room, and those girls would have they would have their cotton sweats on. Everybody had their thumbs taped up. You know, chalk was all over the room, because I showed them how to chalk their hands. And they were like a little Olympic weightlifting team, man. It was awesome. And they loved it. They loved it.
You just started one. I'm sure they had good technique as well.
Oh, yeah, they did. Oh, yeah. Well, that was the thing too, man. I just was always, I never, even though my athletically competitive, being an actual competitor, I was a pretty good power lifter and Olympic lifter, and I did it till I was 44 years old. But I think that ingrained in me not to worry so much about weight on the bar as I did technique. So it was, I mean, if you weren't showing good technique, you weren't putting more weight on the bar. I wasn't, even in high school, that's so prevalent in high school, man. You look at video and it's just it's a horror show, you know?
Yeah.
And I had coaches at the high schools where I were. Coach, we need to put more weight on the bar. No, we don't. Because coach, you know what? That movement that he's doing right, he's getting more out of that on the field than he is getting his feet 5 feet apart from each other to catch a clean, you know? And I was a stickler. And I think when I went to high school coaching, my age helped me out a lot better, because I'd get a 20 something coach going, hey, we need to put more weight on that bar. And here I would be, I was 55 plus, you know, I was like, no, we don't. And we're not going to. So you go back over there, pick up that chart and keep writing down weights.
Let's wrap up with some rapid fires. I'll start off. I know you're a reader. You recommended, Rebuilding. I remember I've read it, and it was one I'd never heard of. If you only have one, you can only have one. What's your best, maybe two, what's your best book recommendation?
Oh, man. And I tell you what, Bill Starr, The Strongest Shall Survive. Now, you three young people are going to look at that and go, this is boring, and this is basic, and this is not worth a, but that book was one of the first ones I read, and it's just really, it's about training heavy, medium, and light, and doing total body training in each session. So it's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or it's a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. It revolves around cleans. It's kind of like it's kind of like the starting strength philosophy, right? That John Ripito, Mark Ripito came up with. Mark and I have known each other forever. We competed against each other back in the 80s. It rotates around the clean, the back squat, and bench, and bent over rows. But that book, The Strongest Shall Survive, is a really good book. If you want to get real deep into it, you got to read it slow. Al Miller and Johnny Parker wrote a book a few years ago called The System. And that's that they were fortunate enough to take a trip long time ago to the NSCA sponsored, where they went to what were at the time Eastern European countries behind the Iron Curtain and watched their Olympic lifters train. And they came back with, Coach, I don't know if you've had exposure to Al Miller and Johnny Parker, but God, they just came back.
I read the book and it made my head hurt, but I read it.
Yeah, it's once. but it does. You do have to just take little snippets out of there, you know, just really, really slow. Those would be two, but there's a bunch of them, man. And there, you know, and there's a bunch of BS out there too. I mean, but those are two that I really value a lot.
I don't know if you could find a copy of The Strong Shall Survive.
You'd have to do a deep dive. You'd have to do and it's probably going to be, even though it's a simple book. I mean, all the pictures in there are hand drawn by Bill Starr. But I bet you it's probably expensive to get.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, there, you know, I wish I had, I could think of some more, but there's a bunch of them out there, but The Strongest Shall Survive, The System by Al and Johnny Parker, I don't know. I could come up with some more, but just right off.
Your job so much. Are you a podcast guy, or do you know how
to? You know, I need to start doing that. I do need to start diving into the podcast more, because some of those, as you know, where y'all live in, some of those West Texas roads get kind of long, you know. But yeah, I could. I'm a big music guy.
I'll send you a few links, and then I'll tell you how to open them, and then you can listen to it and you'll love it.
Great.
Any more rapid fires? All right. And then, hey, May 30th, clinic.
Yep.
Big country. Mark it down. No weddings. No.
No. We're kind of wedding out for a little bit. I am going to miss a couple of really good clinics that, as a sales rep, they're important for me to go to. But my goddaughter's getting married on the weekend of January the 17th. So I'm going to miss, out in East Texas, the coach at Longview, John King.
Piney Woods Clinic.
Piney Woods Clinic, man.
And feed you breakfast and lunch. That's why I always went to it.
Yeah, yeah. Good clinic. So I'm gonna, so yours is gonna be what, May?
May 30th.
May 30th, okay.
Mark it down.
Well, and count on us for the financial end of it too.
You want to speak?
Do I want to speak?
I want you to speak.
Yeah, Coach, I'll speak, but we're also gonna do what we did last year on the sponsorship too.
Awesome. Hey, who's someone besides Whit that I should reach out to? I've got Josh Bryant. I don't know if you know Josh.
Oh yeah, I know Josh. Yeah.
Which is a little bit different because he's not a coach. He's a soft commit. Kyle Keyes and Dennis Dyer.
Okay. Yeah, Kyle, good. Yeah.
Billy Jean from Tulsa.
You sure you want me? You sure? You got a pretty good lineup without me there, man. I might bring that whole thing down.
But if you think I'm gonna give me one more.
Put me like it. So it's 2 days, right? Or just one day?
Just one. We just talk shop and drink beer the night before. It's not official.
Well, then put me at the first one of the day. That way the guys that drank too much beer won't have to show up. But I could be one of them, but so.
Arm wrestle Joe, see if you can get Joe to come.
I'll talk to Joe Ken. Yeah. I'm glad that worked out with his son, Peter, coming last year.
Oh, man, he killed it. We need to get him on this podcast, too.
I think that'd be good.
He looks like his dad. He talks like his dad. I know. Oh, it was kind of eerie, you know. They just
I tried to hire Joe fresh out of college. He was coaching in private school in Florida. He and his wife paid their way to come to TCU and interview with me. I'd just been made the head guy and I wanted to hire him. And so he's leaving. And again, I know you young people can't relate to this, but back then you'd go on an interview, you'd bring your transcripts with you like this. Right. And so I said, hey, give me your transcript because I'm going to go across the street to Exercise Fizz and I'm going to see about, you know, you getting in. He goes, okay, Coach, but man, I had a good time at Wake Forest when I was an undergrad. I said, okay. He goes, no, Coach, it's pretty bad. I remember looking at it going, yeah, Joe, that's pretty bad. And so, and he'll tell you, he doesn't mind me telling the story. I couldn't get him into TCU grad school. Well, I'd had a previous GA who had really screwed some things up and he burned a bridge over there. So I couldn't go back door and say, hey, let's, you know, because hell, I got into school there, right? So that's where I got my master's. Anyway, those profs were like, no, but we had this master's called a master's in adult education. And that's what all the athletic department GAs, no matter what sport, that's the one they went into. There was no GRE. GPA, you had to have C average, you know. I mean, it was just a master's for people that were out working that wanted to have MA behind their name, right? And so I said, Joe, we got this master's of adult studies that you could do, and you could. I said, man, I need you here. And he goes, no, I want to get a master's in a related field, Coach. I'm sorry, but I can't do that. So anyway, again, cold call days, right? Ron Thompson was the head strength coach at Boise State at the time. And whenever we needed somebody, we just called each other on the phone and said, hey, man, you got a guy? Or you put it in the NSCA. They had a letter. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a website back then. But anyway, Ron called me and goes, hey, man, I need a GA. And I said, I got a guy for you, dude. He doesn't need to come see you. He's married. You need this guy, Joe Ken. So he called Joe. He ends up hiring Joe to be his GA out there. Joe goes to Boise. Ron leaves. Joe becomes the head guy at Boise, and Joe's career just takes off. You know, and so Dynamic hired Joe to be director of education before they hired me. I'm driving to the airport to go to the interview with Dynamic, and I'm really waffling. I'm not digging this thing. I'm not real sure about it. So I call him up and I think they had him call me because I could tell I wasn't feeling it too much. And he goes, yaks, we've been trying to work together for the last 30 blankety blank years. You got to take this job, you know, and we've had a great time since that time. We had a great time working together.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Funny. I'll tell you three, this is a funny business, man. It's funny how and that's another thing, you know, to your question earlier, you know, the why, the relationship part of it is just so huge. So, I mean, you know, James and I and a number of other people, man, the relationships that you will build, and it'll go beyond, you know, I'm godparents to a bunch of strength coaches' kids, you know, I mean, it'll go beyond that, just working together day to day. So that's another big part of it too. That I think is unique to not just strength coaching, but coaching as well. Cause you just go through, you know, it's just all that stuff, man, you know, standing on the sidelines, getting your butt kicked in a game, or, you know, your basketball team loses in overtime, you're sitting on the bench. And I mean, just all that stuff you go through, it's different in athletics than it is any other job, I think. Of course, I'm biased. And then it's way different in strength and conditioning, because think of the amount of time you spend with those athletes, and you see them at their best, and man, you see them at their worst too, right? And you have to make them do things that they don't necessarily want to do that day, you know, and it's unique.
It is, and it's awesome. Well, Yawks, man, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insight. That was awesome. Didn't disappoint at all.
Well, pass on my contact to everybody.
Okay.
In here, and James will tell you this, and other people that know me, if y'all ever need anything that I can help you out with, I'm just a text or a phone call away.